Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Classes of Mail. My name is Alan Gigax, and today we're going to read more from the M39. I cannot get enough of this M39. I am so far ahead on episodes right now because I just want to keep reading it. It's so informative and so empowering. I know I've said this in other episodes as well, but I stand by it. What we're going to read today, you know, just opening up my tablet and seeing 122 scheduling carriers, it makes me think about my own station, where we're going to be probably, or well, potentially changing our start time soon. We're going to be moving our start times backward because our parcels aren't showing up on time. And we don't have enough clerks to throw the parcels, and so we have to wait for parcels. And so none of us are leaving in that magical 1 hour office time because the parcels aren't ready yet. And we have already learned in previous sections of the M39 how management is supposed to handle the late dispatch of parcels. They're supposed to be sending messages to the plant and making sure they have enough staff to handle the parcels when they come in and stuff like that. But what we're going to talk about now with the schedule just dovetails into that. And so, you know, again, this is empowering. This is how you push back against management and get them to do their jobs. Or at least, well, let's talk about it. All right, here we go. 122, section 122, scheduling carriers, I should say. 122.1, establishing schedules. 122.11, consider the following factors in establishing schedules. A, schedule carriers to report before 6 a.m. only when absolutely necessary. B, fix schedules to coincide with receipt and dispatch of mail. At least 80% of the carrier's daily mail to be cased should be on or at their cases when they report for work. Okay, so this is the story at my station. We have all of our mail. We're never waiting for mail. And so in this section where it's talking about how you deal with the carrier's schedule, it depends on when the mail gets there. I would argue that parcels are a separate issue, which are addressed in a separate section. It doesn't talk about parcels in this scheduling section. It talks about mail. And if our schedules gets changed, you can be sure that that is an argument that I'm going to make as a union steward. So is 80% of our mail there? You're damn right 80% of our, 100% of our mail is there, essentially, or very close to it. All right, so that's B. C, schedule carriers by groups. Form groups of carriers who make the same number of delivery trips and whose office time is approximately the same. D, generally schedule carriers of the same group to begin, leave, return, and end at the same time. E, schedule so that delivery customers should be approximately the, or delivery to customers should be at approximately the same time each day. F, make a permanent schedule change when it is apparent that one or more days' mail volume varies to where it is causing late leaving. So once again, this is a criteria under which they could change the schedule, that the mail volume is causing people to leave late. That's not the problem. It's not our volume that's the problem. And it's not the mail either. The mail is there. The issue is the way the parcels are being managed. And G, schedule carriers non-work days in accordance with the national agreement. 122.12, post all schedules and keep them up to date. So it doesn't say post all schedules only for regular carriers and leave CCAs hanging. It says post all schedules and keep them up to date. There is a weekly schedule that your CCAs and your PTFs should be on. That schedule is always subject to change, but they have an obligation to at least schedule. So at my station, they've taken this cop-out position of just scheduling CCAs at 9:30 every day. We start our work day at 8 a.m., and the CCAs then come in at 9:30, and they do like auxiliary assistance. You know, other people case up the mail, and CCAs take it. And so they're just scheduled every single day, 6 days a week, at 9:30 a.m. And then they're supposed to check the daily schedule to see what time they're actually needed the next day. They might be off. They might be coming in at 8. They might be going to another station, and that's on the daily schedule. So what I tell them is, yes, you have an obligation to see what tomorrow's schedule is. But if tomorrow, you know, if today's Monday, and it says that you're off Tuesday, Okay, go home, you're off Tuesday. The next time you report is Wednesday at 9:30, because that was your schedule the last time you saw it. So yeah, management has an obligation to schedule, and here it is right here. Post all schedules and keep them up to date. 122.2, carriers leaving schedules. 122.21, establish leaving schedule. The leaving time for the carrier is determined by the following. A, workload, the normal workload for the route. B, availability of mail, the time all the mail for the same day's delivery is available. C, well, once again with B, it talks about the mail. What time is the mail ready? Parcels are addressed elsewhere. C, necessary office time, time required to case this mail, withdraw, tray, and or strap out mail, obtain parcels, and complete other required office duties. And then D, business hours, normal community business hours. Notice that none of those, there's no option, or there's no point E that says arbitrarily do all this in 1 hour. It takes what it takes to do your morning office work. There is no fixed time. There is no 1 hour office time. The time is what it is. If you're engaging in time-wasting practices and getting out late because of that, that's its own separate issue. That is handled on an individual basis. But this whole idea of this arbitrary, hey, you got to be out on the street by whatever time, it's not in the M41, it's not in the contract, and it's not in the M39. And how do we all know this now? Because we've read them all now, and it's not in there. Dude. All right. 122.22, maintaining leaving schedule. Carriers must be trained and motivated to complete their office work so that they may leave the office on time each day. The delivery unit manager must be aware of and record the daily workload for each route. And, A, provide assistance where necessary for carriers to meet scheduled leaving times. You know, that kind of assistance, in my opinion, would be like having extra people to throw the parcels. B, recognize when a judicious use of curtailment of non-preferential mails is appropriate. And C, use carrier late leaving reports to help determine performance efficiency and also to indicate possible training needs. Delivery managers at all levels must take positive steps to instill every employee with a sense of importance in the daily need to maintain schedules and perform all assigned duties within the allocated time. So, once again, this manual that is for management emphasizes training. And I don't know how things are where you work, but where I work, the training is essentially non-existent, which is why I started this podcast. So here's managers not following their own handbooks to the detriment of everyone. Moving on, 122.3, authorizing overtime and auxiliary assistance. 122.31, before overtime or auxiliary assistance is authorized, determine whether A, carrier can complete delivery within scheduled time. B, leveling the daily workload can be achieved by observing provisions in 612 Postal Operations Manual. So ultimately, it's up to you, the carrier, to decide whether or not you're going to be able to complete your delivery within the scheduled time. Management can certainly have their opinion on it, but you know, ultimately, you are the arbiter of how long it takes. 122.32. When relief is essential, use the following criteria, not necessarily in the order listed, in determining the most economical manner in providing it. A. Use overtime when it would be more economical than providing auxiliary assistance. Consider time in traveling to and from the route, drive out cost or car fare cost, availability of replacements, delivery time, and conservation of fuel. B. Use auxiliary street assistance in the field when it would be more economical than using overtime or providing assistance in office and or there is no replacement available who is proficient in casing mail. Before authorizing street assistance, consider impact of use of fuel. C. Use auxiliary assistance in the office when it would be more economical than using overtime or providing auxiliary assistance in the field. The following must also be considered. 1. The replacement must have fair knowledge of the route and be able to case the mail with reasonable proficiency. 2. The replacement is employed in casing mail at a time when the regular is not in the office or on duty, or where a separate case for flats and papers is available and the replacement would not interfere with the regular. Management must instruct employees performing casing assistance not to load letter separations with large pieces and flats that would impair sorting additional letter mail. D. Keep up to date a list of replacements most familiar with individual routes. Delivery services managers must use good judgment in determining the most efficient and economical methods of assigning overtime or assistance on high volume days to maintain normally delivery schedules. And 122.33, the employee, upon request, will be provided a PS Form 3996 carrier auxiliary control after the supervisor has been verbally informed as to the reason for the request. The employee shall not be denied the form, and upon request, a duplicate of the completed form will be provided the employee. It is amazing to me that there are still offices out there where management won't give the carrier the 3996. It's in the M41. It's in the M39. Like, what are they standing on? What are these people thinking? You know, this stuff drives me so crazy. All right, moving on. 123, providing relay service. So we don't do relays where I work. It's all driving in postal vehicles. We don't have any walkout routes. But I'm curious to learn about it. So I'll go ahead and read this section. 123.1, general. 123.11, when mail for a delivery trip weighs more than 35 pounds, make relays to one or more suitable collection or relay boxes appropriately located on the route. When a carrier uses a cart, the 35-pound limitation does not apply for the carryout and or any relays. Relays must also be made to safe points, or may also be made to safe points within office buildings or stores when agreeable to the owners or their representatives. Mail not deposited inside of relay or collection boxes must be placed in sacks locked with padlocks. 123.12. Determine service needs on a day-to-day basis at each unit and take the following actions. And I'm going to interrupt myself here because, again, I don't have any experience with relays where you pick up mail like as you go along your route. But I would bet that there are carriers out there right now saying, man, I can put my relay inside of a business. That would be so much more convenient if I could just like have it dropped at the CVS and pick it up when I go in there. I bet you that's happening right now. Somebody listening to this podcast. But I don't know. I don't know how relay stuff actually goes down in the real world. But now, if this is where you work, you're learning these rules, the rules that management is supposed to abide by. And that's our point here. All right, so again, 123.12, determine service needs on a day-to-day basis at each unit and take the following actions. A, schedule relay carrier to report at delivery unit not earlier than 10 minutes after scheduled leaving time of the foot carriers to avoid excessive office time. B, insist that all carriers prepare relays before their carryout mail and prior to scheduled leaving time to avoid delay to relay carrier resulting in some carriers having to wait for relays. Yeah, that seems reasonable. C. Require all carriers to sack and label relays. The label should show the location of the relay and the number of the foot route. It may also contain the number of the relay in order of relay delivery. That seems like a good idea. D. If space permits, have carriers place relays on a designated conveyance on the workroom floor rather than leave them in the aisles, around, or under their cases. E. Require carriers to include all mail in relays except registered. F. Use existing service as far as possible in making relays, including interstation service, motor vehicle service, motorized and parcel post carriers, collectors, and rural carriers if the mileage of the rural carrier is not increased. Make relays by part-time flexibles when other services are inadequate. 123.2. Weighing relays. Managers must weigh relays as needed, but not less than once annually to determine that only warranted relays are being made. If the unit manager feels it is necessary, he or she should periodically check to determine if all relays are warranted. 123.3. Testing. 123.31. To conduct a test showing relays prepared and delivered, A. Require each foot carrier to complete a form for two or more days showing location of each relay point and the time the carrier picks up the mail from each point. Use PS Form 1627. B. Require each relay carrier to complete a form for the same period showing the location of each relay point, the number of sacks placed at each point for each route, and the time. Use PS Form 1627. 123.32. Enter opposite each relay location on the relay sheet the earliest time the foot carrier tapped the box. Circle entries where carriers waited for relays or where tolerance between time of deposit by relay carrier and time of arrival by foot carrier is small and could result in the foot carrier waiting for relays on some days. 123.4, determining need for relay points. 123.41, a collection box can be used after determining the number of warranted relays per foot route needed daily for the mail volume weighing in excess of 35 pounds. 123.42, establish the most suitable locations on the route for depositing relayed mail. Install a collection box at the relay point where mail volume and public convenience warrant. 123.43, assure that a collection box will accommodate both collection mail and all relay mail. 123.44, consider the installation of a relay box where A. requirements for a collection box are not met. B. A collection box will not accommodate the relays at a particular location. C. There is a need for the storage of satchel carts. And D. Where required at strategic locations along shuttle and arterial collection runs for exchange of mail. All right, and then there's a chart here that shows how to fill out Form 1627. I'm going to skip that. And we move on to 124, parking area. Dude, you know I'm having a problem with parking at my station. This is still not resolved. My station manager, for whatever reason, is not pulling the trigger on getting our parking spaces designated. And, like, what the hell? What's the downside to marking each parking space? I don't know. I've asked him. He doesn't have a good answer. So I have a suspicion I'm about to get more ammunition for, dude, we really need to number our parking spaces. 124.1, assign spaces to USPS vehicles. Whenever possible, USPS vehicles will be parked near the dock in specifically assigned spaces, which are identified by individual route numbers. Oh, isn't that something? It says right here in the management manual that the spaces are supposed to be identified by individual route numbers. Dude, and somehow we can't get it done at my station. Like, this is ridiculous. Well, add another citation. All right, 124.2. Priorities for parking area. No, I'm not going on. This is why, to me, reading this stuff is so important and understanding it is so important. Because I've certainly gone off half-cocked on stuff before. In fact, like at the beginning of this podcast series, I had an episode for the CCAs where I talk about being sent to other stations and how they're supposed to take volunteers and then do the most junior and stuff like that. And it turns out that the definition for the word installation, I didn't really understand what the difference was between an installation and a station and whatever. And so like here in Las Vegas, the whole Las Vegas area is considered one installation, and CCAs can be bounced from one station to another within that installation willy-nilly. I didn't know that, so I go off half-cocked. Once we got to the end of the JCAM, or no, it was in my local agreement, where we read about what the installations were and then what the different delivery units were and, you know, what the difference is in those terms. And so this parking issue is another situation where I could have just gone off half-cocked and, oh, it turns out there's no obligation at all to designate parking spaces and you're just asking for stuff that we don't have to do. But no, it's right here. Yes, you were supposed to number those freaking spaces. All right, that's my own issue. 124.2, priorities for parking area access. When the delivery unit's parking area is too small to accommodate all USPS-owned vehicles, USPS leased vehicles, and employee drive-out vehicles, the following priorities will be observed in assigning spaces. A. USPS-owned vehicles. B. USPS leased vehicles. C. Employee drive-out vehicles. All right, and I'm going to note for you guys that those are all mail delivery vehicles. And here in 124.3, it talks about your own car. 124.3, limitation on employee parking. Employees' personal vehicles must not be permitted to park anywhere that they could interfere with official vehicle operations or designated customer parking. And that ends 124. Moving on to 125, carrier work methods, street. 125.1, loading carrier vehicles. I will see if it says anywhere in here that it's supposed to take 20 minutes. I bet it doesn't. Let's find out. The carrier should take all mail for delivery to the vehicle at the same time, using a hamper or other assigned conveyance. Avoid extra trips to the vehicle unless they are absolutely necessary due to the quantity of mail. After clocking onto street time, carriers should proceed directly to their vehicles and load the mail in an orderly fashion. When loading the vehicle, parcels must be arranged in delivery sequence where they will be convenient to the carrier. On curbline routes, the working trays of letter and flat mail should be placed on the vehicle's working shelf with the addresses faced so the carrier can easily read them. Oh, it's called a shelf. So in, I think it was my episode on staying organized, I referred to when you're sitting in the seat and there's that big metal thing to your left where you put all your mail, I was called that the tray, and it was confusing that you put your trays on the tray. It turns out that's called a shelf. All right, I will try to remember that in the future. So anyway, the trays of letter and flat mail should be placed on the vehicle's working shelf with the addresses faced so the carrier can easily read them. Flat mail is placed to the right of the letter mail. On park and loop routes, trade letters and flats must be placed in a sequential order so that the carrier can quickly identify the mail for each loop. After loading, the carrier must take empty equipment and parcels missorted to the route to a location designated by the delivery manager. So it says flat mail is placed to the right of letter mail. I don't do that. I put my letter mail at the forwardmost position on my shelf because it doesn't have a height that's going to impede my mirrors. So I'll put that at the frontmost position. In the middle is where I'll put my residual mail. And then to the left is where I'll put, I usually tray my spurs, and I'll put my spurs in a tray there. So I guess I'm not abiding by what management wants me to do in that regard. Oh well, let them bust me for it. 125.2, loading times. Ah, here we go. This is where it will mention that you only get 20 minutes to load your truck. 125.21, general. Where a motorized delivery unit does not have a ramp and loading times have been assigned to reduce congestion, carriers should be required to observe their assigned loading times. And again, that's loading times, like what time you go load your truck, not the time it takes. 125.22, daily supervision. Delivery unit managers must supervise loading area activities daily to prevent operational delays. 125.23, load at assigned space. Where a dock has a ramp, vehicles should be loaded at their assigned parking spaces. When loading at the dock is necessary, the unit manager must stagger loading to avoid lost waiting time. 125.24, transport mail to vehicles. Mail for curbline or park and loop routes must be placed in hampers or other suitable conveyances for transporting to the loading point. 125.25, sequence parcels when loading. While loading parcels into the vehicle, carriers are to arrange them in the sequence of delivery. Instruct carriers to place missorted, missent, or undeliverable as addressed parcels and empty equipment in a specific safe location, either on the dock or in another readily accessible location, which will not require them to return to their casing area. Oh, that's a good policy. We actually have our missorted parcels right in the middle of our station next to the supervisor's desk. But we have doors on three sides of the building, and there's probably not a better place to put it. Next, 125.3, authorized lines of travel. Carriers are required to follow their authorized lines of travel at all times. On motorized routes, this includes travel to and from the route, authorized lunch locations, brake locations, refueling locations, collection boxes, and on the route. Note, managers may analyze vehicle travel by comparing the mileage used daily with the authorized mileage. All right, 125. Where did it go? Hold on, I just scrolled here accidentally. Thought I saw. Oh, here we go. 125.4, carrier satchel. 125.41, required use. All right, now pay attention here, because this is a dispute that carriers have. Like, when am I required to use my satchel? Am I required to use a satchel at all? Well, this is what covers it. This is where this policy actually comes from. 125.41, required use. Carriers must use a satchel when delivering mail on foot, other than for authorized dismount deliveries. Now, what is meant by authorized dismount deliveries? Well, a dismount delivery is where you go away from the truck to deliver the mail, like for, and please correct me if I'm wrong, classesofmail@gmail.com, for sidewalk delivery, where you get out of the truck, hop over the sidewalk, put the mail in the box, or for centralized delivery like apartment complexes or cluster boxes. Those would be dismount deliveries. So for those kind of deliveries, according to this, you don't need your satchel. Carriers using the double satchel may wear it as a single or double pouch with or without the shoulder straps and waist belt according to the needs of the carrier and the route. On that note, I have a double satchel and I absolutely love it. It is so much better for me than having the mail just hanging off one side of my body. It's more comfortable, I can carry stuff more evenly, and I absolutely love that double satchel. All right, 125.42. The satchel is loaded with all the letter, flat, and spur mail for a loop or relay to minimize the trips to the replenishment point, except when this would require carrying more than 35 pounds of mail. When using the double satchel in a configuration with the waist belt, the satchel must be put on first and then loaded with mail. Carriers should use their discretion in arranging mail in the double satchel to ensure the most efficient methods and comfortable weight distribution. Look at that. I get to load my double satchel as I please. Although I have to say that I do use the waist belt. I have the shoulder straps and the waist belt. And a lot of times I'll load my satchel not on my body, because when it's on me, it's harder for me to load it. And, you know, I can only twist so much. I can't get as much stuff in there. And so I violate this rule from time to time, just for practical reasons. So, you know, I dare you to come out and bust me on it. All right, 125.5. Park in designated location. All right, no, hold on. I feel flippant saying that, like I dare you to come out and bust me. It is important to me to know these rules. I want to know that, hey, I'm supposed to load the satchel while I'm wearing it. And most of the time I do. But sometimes I have to take it off because just getting things to fit in there, it won't fit. And so knowing the rule lets me know that, hey, at some point I may have to answer for this, why I'm doing it this way, when the rule says I'm supposed to load it while I'm wearing it. And so I have an answer for that. And I have to be prepared to answer for that because I am violating this procedure. So that's another way that knowing these rules empowers us. Because if a supervisor came out and started giving me a hard time about that, I'd be blindsided if I weren't already familiar with these rules. And knowing this stuff gives me the upper hand. And hopefully it gives you the upper hand as well. All right, 125.5. Park in designated location. On a park and loop route, the carrier must park the vehicle in the locations the unit manager has designated. After parking, the carrier must perform delivery as on a foot route, except for delivery of parcels. 125.6, finger mail. Carriers shall finger mail except when driving or walking up or down streets or curbs, or steps or curbs rather, when crossing streets, or when this would create a safety hazard to themselves or the public. All right, side note here. I was a Carrier Academy instructor for like 6 years, and of course got fired from it for having this podcast. That issue is still ongoing. But it was not unusual in class to have there be little snickers when we would talk about fingering the mail. You know, even I'm almost 50 years old and I can still snicker at that. And so one time there was this woman in the front of the class and she said, you know, that's enough, fingering the mail. I'm tired of everybody laughing at it. Can we call it something else instead of fingering the mail? And I thought about it and I said, well, I guess it's like verifying the mail, that you're looking at each piece and verifying it. So I guess we can say verifying instead of fingering. And that reminds me of when I was in high school, I had this girlfriend and she was Mormon. And she would only let me verify her. Ah, boy. Good times. Good times in the Carrier Academy. All right, moving on. 125.7, parcel delivery. Carriers ordinarily must deliver parcels at the same time other mail is delivered, since separate delivery of parcels would necessitate traveling the route twice. However, if parcels cannot be carried with other mail in the shoulder satchel or satchel cart where authorized, instruct the carrier regarding delivery of parcels using one of the methods outlined below. A. Parcels too heavy or large for satchel. Bypass the stop until the loop is completed, then drive to the delivery point to deliver the parcel and other mail at the same time. Use this method when the mailer or addressee has authorized the carrier to leave the parcel. B. Delivery of parcel after completing loop. The carrier may park in the usual location and deliver letter and flat mail first. However, when delivering the letters, determine if the parcel is deliverable. If no one is available to receive the parcel, but the carrier knows that someone is usually available, the carrier does not leave a PS Form 3849. The parcel is returned to the office for a second attempt on the next delivery day. In this situation, a notice is left if the parcel cannot be delivered after the second attempt. If no one is available to receive the parcel and the carrier knows that no one is usually available, the carrier completes and leaves PS Form 3849 after the first attempt and returns the parcel to the delivery unit. If the carrier does not know if someone is usually available to receive parcels, a notice is left after the first attempt. In the Carrier Academy, in the officially approved slides, they also talk about a third method of parcel delivery on a park and loop, where you can simply rearrange the mail to start at the delivery point that has that parcel. It's a little complicated to talk about in here. I usually did it with diagrams in the Academy, but that's the method that I usually use. 125.8, curbline delivery. 125.81, serve boxes from vehicle. On a curbline delivery route, the carrier must serve the mailbox without leaving the vehicle, except to collect postage dues, obtain payment or signature for extra services mail, to deliver parcels too large for the box, or to serve a box temporarily blocked, or to serve a box temporarily blocked, or to serve a box temporarily blocked. Also, it says here that if the box is temporarily blocked, then you would dismount to serve that box. So for those of you who like to argue about this on Facebook, here it is. You are supposed to still deliver the mail to that box. All right. 125.82, maintain orderly cargo area. Motorized delivery carriers must maintain the cargo area of their vehicle in an orderly fashion to permit rapid identification of mail to be delivered. 125.9, collection of mail. 125.91, private receptacles. Carriers must collect mail placed adjacent to, in, or on private mail receptacles when delivery is made to that particular delivery point. Carriers must always collect mail from curbline boxes they pass on their routes when the signal flag is raised. After collecting, the carrier will lower the signal flag whether mail has been delivered or not. Carriers will not raise the flag at any time nor operate any other signal device. 125.92, collection boxes. Carriers will collect mail from designated collection boxes as scheduled. 125.93, barcode or similar tracking systems. Local management may select among the approved barcode or similar tracking systems to affix a barcode or component of a similar tracking system to any number of collection points for use in the review of collection services. Carriers will scan barcode labels affixed at collection points with barcode reading devices or utilize the scanner of a similar tracking system assigned to them for that purpose. I bet it's supposed to be a scanner or a similar tracking system. Either way, you use your scanner. Similar tracking system in general refers to any number of different data collection systems available in the marketplace as long as they collect similar information in the same general manner as the barcode system. Examples, scanner wand, buttons, etc. Up next, 126, office work while carrier is on route. Oh, this will be interesting. So I have often wondered, what is it that my supervisors are doing while I'm out on the route? I assume that they're sitting there behind the desk and maybe scrolling on their phone and having donuts and stuff like that. But let's find out what's really going on. All right. Now, actually, I've hung around in the office. If you have two, it's kind of amazing how much busy work supervisors have to do. It's a lot of data entry, but they also answer customer complaints and, well, I don't know, that may vary your station. Let's just read what the manual actually says. 126.1, review of work area. 126.11, review the carrier work area after carriers are on the street. Spot check carrier cases daily to make certain no mail is lodged behind or under the shelves. Oh, we call those sleepers. 126.12, verify the type and amount of curtailed mail to see if it agrees with that shown on PS Form 1571, Undelivered Mail Report, and PS Form 3921, Daily Delivery Unit Volume Recording Worksheet. A simple system is to measure in linear feet and inches the amount of mail curtailed and multiply by the number of pieces per foot per class of mail. 225 pieces per foot for average letter size circulars, 115 pieces per foot for average flat circulars, and 1200 pieces per foot for average postcard circulars. See Handbook M32, Management Operating Data System for Mod 1 Offices. 126.13, examine the carrier throwback case to be sure mail has been processed properly. 126.14, examine carrier work area for safety and or health hazards. 126.15, review any PS Forms 1639, carrier's report of recurring missorted mail, and send to appropriate processing manager. 126.2, analysis of curtailed mail. Report to the appropriate manager the total amount of curtailed mail recorded by carriers on PS Form 1571. Include in this report mail not delivered by the carriers and returned to the office. And there's a couple of charts here that we're not going to try to describe. So if you want to see those charts, you know, you can get your own copy of the M39 and check those out. Those are on pages like 27 and 28. Next, 126.3, a record of carrier work hours, absences, replacements, and overtime. Complete PS Form 3997 unit daily record as per instructions on the form or electronic equivalent from a nationally approved computer system that provides the equivalent information. Prepare PS Form 3997 several days in advance. Since scheduled absences and scheduled replacements are known, add only the unscheduled absences and their unscheduled replacements. 126.4, report of late leaving and returning. 126.41, at non-PSDS offices, the delivery unit manager has the responsibility for preparing PS Form 1813 late leaving and returning report first carrier delivery trip. The reason for late leaving and late returning must be indicated on the report. 126.42, in offices using the PSDS system, managers must review the daily carrier report printout and note those carriers who left late. Circle the BS or beginning street and note the reason for late leaving in the right margin. Do the same for RS or return street. The reasons for late leaving and or late returning are to be determined by the unit manager and used as judgment factors when preparing an analysis of late leaving and or late returning on PS Form 1627. Assure that all clock rings are accurate because their carrier report could be selected as a basis for completing the PS Form 1840B carrier time card analysis. Retain the carrier report printout in the delivery unit for 1 year. And there's a few more charts here, and then we move on to 126.5, review of carrier cases and work area. The better organized a carrier unit manager is, the more he or she will accomplish. One aid in keeping the carrier work area in proper order is a checklist developed to meet local conditions and situations, modified as needed, and from which a few carrier cases can be reviewed each week. The following are representative of some of the items that should be checked periodically. A. Are case labels legible and complete? B. Is carrier's route book satisfactory? Look for entry legibility and completeness. On PS Form 1564A delivery instructions, 1. Has the carrier filled in all the necessary information? Are the relay boxes and street letter and mail chute boxes listed in order of collection? On a park and loop route, has the carrier shown the locations of park and loop stops rather than the locations of relay boxes? 2. Has the carrier entered information such as line of travel to reach the beginning of the route, line of travel to reach the lunch place, return to next delivery location, and return to office? Note, authorized lunch periods, travel, and locations where the carrier is authorized to leave the route are recorded on PS Form 1564A by the carrier when the USPS provides reimbursement or transportation to and from lunch places. Okay, hold on. Authorized lunch periods, travel location, or... I'm going to read this again because I think I'm reading this for the first time along with you. And I think it says that the approved lunch spaces on your 1564A are for when the post office is providing reimbursement to the... Well, let's read it again. Authorized lunch periods, travel, and locations where the carrier is authorized to leave the route are recorded on PS Form 1564A by the carrier when the U.S. provides reimbursement or transportation to and from lunch places. If they give you the mail truck, does that count as them providing transportation? Well, I'm going to read on. Maybe this will be cleared up. In all cases, travel time to and from the lunch place will be charged to the lunch period. Yeah, so that's something we cover in the academy. And just so you know, like as soon as you break off your route to go to lunch, that's when the clock starts ticking. So if you drive somewhere that's 10 minutes away to go to lunch, 10 minutes to get back, you only get 10 minutes to have your lunch. Enter on the reverse of PS Form 1564A any deviation for lunch by carrier technician or other regularly scheduled replacement. The carrier has the option of selecting up to 3 locations for lunch. When authorizing lunch places, give consideration to reasonableness of location from the standpoint of suitable eating places, and in particular to the reasonableness of the distance from the route to the eating place and back to the route. If at all possible, the authorized lunch stop should be on the line of travel. When practical, avoid having groups of carriers congregate at one location. All right, so it doesn't really clear it up that whether I have to have, you know, the post office isn't reimbursing me for travel, so do I have to fill those spots out on my 1564A? I bet I still do. I bet I'm probably interpreting that wrong. But if you know the answer definitively, classesofmail@gmail.com, let me know. 3, have approved approximate locations for street break periods have... Oh my God. Okay. Have approved approximate locations for street break periods been entered on Form 1564A? Street break locations should also be entered on route maps. Indicate sequence, i.e. after swing 2, etc. All right, apparently I have lost my ability to read. Good thing we are almost done with this section. Then there's another chart here, and then we go on to more stuff they're supposed to check. A, are the PS Forms 3982, change of address, being maintained as instructed in Handbook M41? B, is the carrier maintaining PS Forms 1564A, 1564B special orders, and PS Form 1621 delivery management report? I don't even know what a Form 1621 is. C, are there any PS Forms 3575, change of address order, in or on the carrier case that should have been processed by the carrier? If so, why weren't they processed? D, is the work area clean of trash, and have all empty sacks and other equipment been placed in their proper location? All right, considering I apparently can no longer read, that is a good opportunity to take a break for the day. We're going to pick up tomorrow or next episode at 127, office work when carriers return from route. And I bet there's going to be no mention in there of it's only supposed to take 5 minutes. Guys, these alleged standards, I know Corey talks about them all the time on From A to Arbitration. If you don't already listen to his podcast, I highly recommend it, From A to Arbitration. It's fantastic. There's also another one called Fed Up with Ron Speakman. And there he talks to carriers who've been mistreated. There's a lot of stuff in there about workers' compensation. And if you're injured on the job, it's a great resource for that. And I've been in contact with him. And at some point, he's going to come on to Classes of Mail to talk about what you should do when you're injured. Because I have no idea. That is a gaping gap. A gaping... Dude, I got to just stop. It's a gap in my knowledge. All right, so anyway, that's going to do it for today. I am tired of flubbing, and that's enough for me. So thanks for listening, guys. I'll catch you next time.